Hey, this is Dr. Drew, and you are listening to This Life
with Bob Forrest
and Dr. Drew.
Here we are. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, gather round once again. Here we are. Get your phone, hook it up to the Bluetooth, get it in the car.
Is that part of your old radio announcement? Also, this episode is courtesy of Bergamot. I may also remind you to quickly take the extra step and go to the app of your choice and subscribe. Bookmark us at drdrew.com. And please rate us on iTunes. Tell us what you like about the podcast. Give us a 5-star rating if you like what you hear. And join our email list. Contact.
Help.
Drdrew.com. Get the newsletter and send your emails in to us. We'll try to get them on the show. Get what's called, we call it now, at this point, at least Dr. Drew's News. Also, check out Weekly Infusion. Let's see. We always, you know. Hang on a second. I just had a seizure. And we also love to hear from you so we get your emails and get on the email list.
What were you thinking? You were thinking two thoughts at one time.
Well, I was thinking about
crossed.
Yeah, I was thinking about the Weekly Infusion and whether we needed to say anything about that. We did not. So
we're building the Drew Empire, Khalil, and we have a guest, one of my best friends, Khalil, named after Khalil Gibran, though we just found out prior to the show, is the most quoted author in the history of literature. Is that true, Khalil?
That is true.
And your dad named you after that guy?
Actually, strangely enough, it was my mother that named me, who's from Poland. My father is from the Middle East, was born in Jerusalem, but my mother was the one that chose the name.
See, that's why I thought he was from India, because it's so universal, Khalil Gibran.
Khalil Gibran, however you want to pronounce it, was a Christian who was born and raised in Lebanon.
Huh. You're kidding?
No.
Well, it's Christian Lebanese. I mean, that's what all those wars were about.
Yeah.
All the different religious sects in Lebanon.
So anyways, Khalil is known as a self-hating Palestinian.
Okay, well, Khalil, first of all, has got a book. That's terrible. He's got a book called I Forgot to Die.
Wow.
Because I Forgot to Die. You can click through Dr.com Amazon banner for all your reading needs. And
it's an amazing book, and I was a part of the story. But tell the story that happened when they call you that.
What? No, I'm not. I can't, the Rick Rubin story?
Yeah.
No, I can't say that story. I'll say that story. Rick Rubin sitting out front.
Famous record producer.
Yeah, he has a health food store in Malibu.
It's called Sun Life Organics?
Yeah, yes. He's got a million of them, but the main one is in Malibu.
We start right out with okay, whatever. So,
just do it.
So Neil Strauss sitting there. Neil Strauss.
The writer for Rolling Stone.
Yeah, the most awesome guy
ever. Neil Strauss wrote The Game.
He did.
He also has a podcast now, but he wrote The Game and he wrote The Truth.
Wasn't he a writer for Rolling Stone?
For many years,
yeah. Yeah.
But The Game, he went and studied those people that do the pickup game. He wrote a book about it, and then he became like a sex addict, I think, and then he got recovery, and then he wrote a book about that. So, so there you go.
It's three guys sitting around. Khalil walks out, and what did they say?
I wanted to meet Billy Corgan, so I'm standing there politely waiting for there to be a break in the conversation. Then all of a sudden, Rick looks up at me and he goes, "He's Muslim. Tell him how you're scared of the Muslims."
That's funny.
I couldn't even talk. I was so nervous. Thanks, Rick.
There you go.
He's Muslim.
You know, why is it that in my community, that's my community, out in front of his stores where I sit every Tuesday night, all the guys are around
there. They're meeting nearby there?
Yeah. Well, and I do alumni group up the street, but there's meetings, and it's just, and everybody has all different backgrounds and all different values and all different economic backgrounds and all different opinions about music and politics, but we all get along and joke around. What happened to that America?
Oh, anybody got an answer? I'm dying to know.
I don't have an answer, but when Haley and I were talking about this yesterday, and I actually sent a text message to the guys, and we were talking about when we first set out to start Sun Life Organics. Of course, I'm not going to have this. But I basically what has happened with, I wake up in the morning and I look at a screen. It's the first thing I do. And then I go downstairs and I turn on another screen. And then throughout the day, I'm staring at screens, and how that's affecting us and how that freaks me out. And the other thing was, how all of a sudden is there a camera on every single one of these devices? And my suspicion is not so weird that we're using these cameras and, you know, it's become such an obsession. My fear is that the cameras are watching us.
So there's a collective camera brain somewhere this recording observing all of human yes, everything humans are doing all at once. And there'd be a collective intelligence.
It is the age. It could be good. There's something to that. We've gone away from conversation and human interaction to a technological thing that is beyond our ability to control it or understand it.
I've noticed also I offload so much onto the phone now. It's interesting. Offload memory, offload planning, just all offloaded.
So I found the text. So this is – I texted this to the guys. I was feeling very emotional yesterday morning. It was my birthday, and I got a very strange message on Facebook, which we can talk about later. But I just
talk about it now.
Well, let me just read the text I sent to the guys. So the Kaizen for the day, which is a Japanese philosophy, turn off Facebook or instant notifications or any unnecessary notifications that constantly distract you and rob you from the moment you're in.
Then you went to Facebook.
He loaded it to Facebook.
I actually sent this on Facebook.
So you communicate with your employees.
In each Sun Life Organics, on the floor, there's a giant sticker that says "Be here now." Hmm. And on every sweatshirt that we have, there's a giant
Best sweatshirt
that says "Be here now." Yeah, Bob's bought like $500 worth of these sweatshirts.
Nice.
Anyway,
the softest cotton.
I said to the kids, look, we work with fruits and vegetables, delivering them in various forms to people who so desperately need their energy. Fruits and vegetables are the last great sacred connection to the sun, to the earth, and to God. I never wanted to create a juice bar. I wanted to create a living room, a church, a temple, because nobody spends time in their living room or church or temple anymore. I have accomplished that goal, and you guys are the custodians of this sacred brand. So talk to the employees, look people in the eye, and genuinely tell them good morning, good afternoon, or good day. Hug one another, love one another, and love the customers as well. And that's why you come there.
But that's what millennials need to hear in a work environment, Drew. Is this constant, I don't know. Khalil is the best at it. He's a maestro of 200 millennials who work for him. And they all love him, and they all jobs, and they're all happy, and they all show up on time, and they're all smiling.
Have you seen something unusual about that population? Or
he's the wizard of them.
Or is it just
whom
you've always employed?
Well,
Who you employ in a juice bar.
Have you been an owner long enough that you've seen an evolution to this new personality style that you have to address differently?
Yeah, I mean, it's not. I grew up in food service back in Ohio.
His dad just yelled at everybody all the time.
And that's true. So, God, you have a good memory.
I've seen him yell at you in some life.
That's also true. So
this is no way to run a business. What the hell is going on here?
You have too many damn employees.
He was complaining about how many employees.
In front of the employees.
And there's a line out the door. I'm like, Dad, I seem to be doing pretty good. So, I had more experience in the food service industry than these kids have been alive. But that old style of managing them and motivating them, it won't work. You yell at them, they'll quit. If you're harsh with them, they'll work at half speed. But if you acknowledge them and you love them and you encourage them and they'll give their all.
I see it every day.
They will go to the end of the earth.
Does that include recovering kids?
Well, he tried that in the beginning. It was weird. Tell him how it all started. So he had a rehab, and he just found it disgusting. So he wanted to migrate out of the rehab.
What was
world.
Disgusting about it?
The amount of money that was passing hands and
for nothing.
Yeah, for basically parents and loved ones throwing money at a problem and throwing an obscene amount of money at a problem and individuals who really had no interest whatsoever in getting better.
Were you charging obscene amounts?
Yes. It was a business.
It
was a business. I rented a house for $17,000 a month, and I had payroll, et cetera. You know, so it was. We didn't charge more than other people. We charged basically what everybody else was charging. But if there was a few people that were getting better, it was the greatest feeling on the planet. But if there was a few people that were just there to buy time or get the law off their back or get their parents off their back, and I'm taking these checks for $10,000 and I'm going to the bank and I'm depositing them, there was a soul sickness there. And it felt like blood money, and I'm too sensitive and too codependent for that business.
So he started a little health food store.
We talked about it a little bit with Candy Finnegan, how I felt uncomfortable even charging for services and stuff, so codependent.
Drew ran a hospital, was the medical director of a detox unit, never got paid.
I made the same as the housekeepers.
He made three. I finally fatted it up. Wait till Khalil. Can I tell him?
Yeah.
He made $3,000 a month for being the medical director of a 40-bed rehab.
You're kidding.
Doctors make 15 minutes of seeing a patient. Wait,
you need to understand, I wasn't making that at the end. That was the heyday.
So I learned from the master.
At the end, I was making
Khalil
about...
Because Khalil gives me shit for not getting paid. Yeah. I learned from him.
Yeah, well, I started out at $10 an hour, and when I quit, I wouldn't even pick up the phone for less than $1,000 a day.
Wow.
I wouldn't. It was too much. There was too, they just
won. It just felt not right to me. So he
got out of it, started this health food store very close by the sober living, right? And the idea was, at first, because I was there, was the kids who were in the sober living were going to work there.
Right.
It never worked out.
Do you?
Not never. There's cash.
Cash. One
is there.
Guy.
Well, there's a few other, and I probably shouldn't mention them names. But
I'm having a flashback. Do you remember the hospital I used to get EOBs at the hospital were using my license to charge for services, and I had to hire an attorney to get them to stop. And I added
up.
So
the hospital was making money and not paying him.
Wait, and I added up all that I'd netted for the entire year to that point. I took it into the administrator at the time. It was $18,000, and there was it was November.
I'm going to tell you something right now, and this is 1,000% the truth, and you know the guy and you know the situation. I have a friend that's in sober living in Malibu. He's been in there for a year, and it fair price or whatever. And please, no names mentioned. And his mother just got a check from the insurance company because there was a bill for over $100,000. For urine tests.
Oh, yeah, that whole thing. Well, he's been telling me about that.
It's over. That's over, though, now, I think.
It's happening as we speak.
Still. So, anyways, he got out of it. He quickly transitioned to the just regular high school kids. I remember. Just get the kids from Malibu High for work part-time, right?
Yeah, that's true.
And I thought, this is going to be a disaster. You can't get 17-year-olds at work. I can't even get my 17-year-old to dump the trash. And he figured it out. And now that's all. How many stores do you have now?
There's 6 stores, and there's a little over 200 employees.
It's amazing. And you go in there, and they're so polite, and they're so respectful.
You got to work on some of your sober folks, the difficult ones.
To try to. Well, he tried.
Yeah, I'm not.
What happened?
I'm just not cut out for that anymore. I'm really not. I mean,
newly sober young kids working for you?
Well, I certainly, because of the law, I can't discriminate against anybody. However, my experience has not been so wonderful with people.
And don't you think that's the Malibu treatment process that makes them feel entitled? I think the whole treatment process.
I don't think it's exclusive to Malibu. I think anywhere where you're charging people $50,000 a month to help them get sober, I think you're going to find a lot of entitlement. You're going to find a lot of people that.
But I mean, like somebody like a year sober or 2 years sober.
Of the greatest employees. Okay. I have a young man named Chris working for me, who is probably the hardest working person I've ever met in my life.
You got to go there, Drew. It's amazing. Cool. You're talking about 8 or 10, 20-something kids working hard, being polite, saying hello to you. As soon as you walk in the door, over the glass that they're working behind, they say, hey, hello, welcome, every time, everybody.
I got confused. I thought you were talking about I got to work on his sober friends. No, I have a lot of people that are in recovery for different things, not just drugs and alcohol, but other co-occurring disorders. I have a lot of people that are in recovery that work for me, and they're the hardest working people we have. They're the most passionate, dedicated people we have.
But the original idea was the 3 month sober guys working, and it didn't work.
The reason I was asking is because Bob's had such difficulty getting millennials to get to work.
Get jobs.
Yeah.
It's hard to find them jobs.
It is. Yeah. And there's also this kind of lost generation, of millennials that sort of don't know. They want it. It's basically like if you're 20 years old, you want to start a blog and travel. That's the thing. You want to start a blog and travel.
I want to start a blog
and
travel.
Yeah, I would do that too.
No, but I watch this. I watch some of these great, amazing, hardworking young people begin to, you know, to wane, to, you know, to, I don't know if it's wax or wane, whatever the word is, but they start to recede a little bit, and they're like, yeah, you know, we're going to go to Bali. And they go to Bali for a month, they come back. Like, yeah, we're going to go to Taipei or wherever they go. It's typically involving surfing and or yoga, and I think it's incredible, and I think people should travel. But I was yelling at these kids, not yelling, but, you know, passionately explaining to them 5 years ago, stop buying $90 Lululemon pants, yeah, and start buying $40 Lululemon stock, because that stock's going to go up, yeah, and in 10 years we're going to put a pair of pants on, and they're going to control our temperature, they're going to measure our heart rate, they're going to know what our metabolic rate is at. Under Armour, Lululemon, Apple, all those companies are going to control the world. So I'm trying to get these kids to invest their money, save their money, because if we would have done that when we were 20, we wouldn't have to work.
When I was 20, I was roadieing for a band in a van going through Utah. It wasn't so good.
Drugs involved?
If you hadn't spent
some drugs, alcohol.
You hadn't spent the money on heroin and alcohol, you could have invested in
well,
Nike.
That, you know the story of that. Chris Hansen, the one non-drug addict in Thelonious Monster through all the years. He was just over there, just not even a part of it, but in the band, right? So we're in Paris, and he's going to leave. The tour is over, and he's going to leave, and he's going to Nice, France, where he's bought a house. And I said, bought a house? What the hell are you talking about? And he just, as he was walking down the platform, he goes, Bob, I'm not a drug addict. We make good money.
Oh, my God.
I stood there. Ouch. I thought about that all the way home to Los Angeles. Like, how much money have I spent on drugs? You could have a house.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
I better get high.
Yeah. Well, I was high the whole way. Well, so let's get to Khalil getting high. So Khalil, I met before he was sober.
Okay, before you get into his story, I want to hear what that Facebook post was.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, it was amazing. The guy. It was his birthday yesterday, and this guy sends this thing. It's amazing.
Yeah.
This is what makes you like Facebook.
I woke up yesterday morning.
That and Bob's tirades about politics.
Yes. Oh, I had good ones today.
I woke up yesterday morning, and of course, like any other morning, I turned on the
machine.
The machine, yeah. Well, I, you know, turned on my phone first, stared at the screen, and then immediately went downstairs and turned on Facebook because I wanted to, you know, see if anybody had wished me happy birthday for Facebook. And
because that's so important.
Vital.
Yeah. 47-year-old man trying to build an empire. Like, I've got my priorities straight. So I turn on the computer, and there's a message request from somebody that's not a friend on Facebook, but yeah, it's like a message request. And I look at it, and I see, you know, kind of a larger black man. And the reason I'm mentioning the color of his skin is because it's relevant. So I click on it, and I start reading the message, and it says...
Wait till you hear this, Drew. You gotta hear this. So beautiful.
He says, a long time ago at Bowser, I was in the lunchroom with the Levesque twins.
School.
I was in the lunchroom with the Levesque twins, and I needed lunch. You gave me money for lunch, and I never forgotten that. I've never forgotten that. Thank you. I've never forgotten that for some reason.
Were you at the same school together or something?
We were at the same school.
Elementary school?
No, that was, I believe, freshman year. So,
high school.
Yeah, high school. So as soon as he said Levesque twins, I literally remember seeing this young man, black man, which it's relevant because 35 years ago in Ohio, in rural Ohio where I grew up, things were still pretty segregated. It wasn't like it is today where we have a black president and, yeah, you know, I'll just leave it at that. But it was very different back there. So I remember seeing this kid, and I remember noticing that something was wrong, and I went over to him. And he kind of, you know, whispered to me that he was hungry, and I very carefully took some money out, and I slipped it to it secretly, and that was it. Someone asked me today, when was the last time you talked to him? That was the last time I talked to him. I don't ever remember seeing him again. I'm sure we went to school together or whatever, but he says, you gave me money for lunch, and I've never forgotten that. Thank you. I've never forgot that for some reason. In fact, one of my sons is named Khalil. Huh. I just thought you should know that.
How wild is that?
That's, I cried. So beautiful. I cried and I cried and I cried, because in the midst of trying to harvest likes or become popular in social media, or, you know, deal with my deep insecurities and self-hatred, in the midst of all that was this beautiful message on the day of my birth, and I just cried. And the reason I cried is because that's my mother. That's literally my mother. That's not me. That's something I inherited from her.
She gives people the dollar.
That I do anything great for people, I don't think twice about it. Whether it's the kid that was drowning in front of our apartment 10 years ago, and I just ran past a lifeguard and swam out into these giant 20-foot faces. I didn't think about it. I didn't care. Or whether it was I chased after a bank robber like 3 years
ago. He did. And it was amazing.
And these guys all laughed at me and made fun
of me. Dude, do you know this? Because I wanted the bank robber to go get away, obviously. But he goes chasing some down.
Were you there?
I was there.
Oh, God. So whatever it is,
I was like, why are you doing that, Khalil?
These selfless acts that I do I can't take any credit for them at all, but because I know I inherited that from my mom. There's some real goodness inside of me left over, hopefully, from my mother.
Can you inherit? Do you think that eventually that's going to be found to be genetically based?
Some of it.
Yeah.
Everything in humans is some genetics, some environment.
Well, the environment is your dad. Your dad is a storm.
He was a tough guy, or he is a tough guy. We're not speaking right now.
Why now? Every 2 months.
No. When the book came out, that was it for him. He stopped talking to me.
He was just here last summer, though.
Yeah, the book came out in December.
Oh.
Yeah. So
what's his yelling or physical abuse, something in there?
There was violence and physical abuse, and I said...
He laid it all out on the line.
I didn't lay it all out. I just said my dad behaved like a monster, or maybe I even said my dad was a monster, which... You know, I'm sorry, that was the truth. I mean, he's not a monster today, and I understand culturally that's how he grew up. When you grow up in the Middle East, you know, beating your wife is not frowned upon. However, in rural Ohio, you know, as a little boy, I inherently knew it was wrong, and it scared the shit out of me.
That's an interesting thing to me. You know it's wrong witnessing it as a child, but adults are going with that childhood trauma thinking it's the right thing to do.
Yeah, they reenact it.
But you understand what I'm saying?
Yes.
As a child, when you witness it, there's the sense of violence.
It's not just wrong, it's shattering, but that forces you to do it again. that's how trauma works.
No, but
that's why people beat their kids.
But no, but I'm more to the core of how we perceive humanity. Mm. I perceive humanity as that child who knows that violence is wrong.
But that child
So humanity is inherently good.
That child has a 60 to 70% chance of being a perpetrator. That child.
Or a people pleaser.
Well.
Or both.
Or both, yeah.
Well, I think we're all good. I think we're all the victims of our ego, and we're the victims of our conditioning and our ego. If you would have grown up in the Middle East, you very very good chance you might hit your wife as well and not think twice about it.
But my feeling is a lot of the aggression in the Middle East and violence stuff is from what's going on in the families. If they don't do something about that, I don't see where the whole thing settles down at all.
I couldn't agree more. And then also I'll add to that it's poverty. It's about poverty. I mean, the kids in Chicago are shooting each other because there's no hope and they're broke. And the people in the Middle East want to blow themselves up because there's no hope and they're broke. So, you know, I have a brother living in Ramallah who has a degree in college, unlike me, and can't get a job. He has a degree in engineering and he can't get a job, and he's got six kids and he can't feed them.
Jeez.
So if he you know, and I don't want to go into what else goes on over there because I don't want to get into a big political thing about Israeli soldiers and this and that and right and wrong, but you know, when you've got no hope, hatred is easy. If you're rich, if you're wealthy, you don't want to blow yourself up. You don't want to shoot your neighbor. Yeah.
So then let's get into the American psyche. We are going to get into it. The American psyche is we're very comfortable. I see the Trump backers. They're living a working class American lifestyle. What's so wrong with that? You got a relatively new car. You got a nice place to live.
Things.
You have cable TV.
Two things.
You have money. You can go eat McDonald's anytime you want. Why are you so fucking angry like people in the West Bank? Well, why is it equal anger here in America?
Well, there's whatever is going on in your family. I mean, the person that's angry, right? That's part of it. Then the happiness research literature shows that your people are happy until they have around somebody that has more, or they see somebody having more, then they become angry and unhappy. So there's too much.
Well, Khalil should be angry and unhappy all the time because all his friends are billionaires.
All right. Well,
yeah, but they're flying me around the world on their private jets, so I'm thrilled.
He's going to Italy tomorrow.
Awesome. I'm pissed.
So, look at how happy he is.
Why not?
Not just Italy, but Monaco. So you know what I
told? He told me the other day.
Now Bob and I are pissed.
Yeah, now we're pissed. Well, no, when he told me 2 days ago, he goes, we're going to Italy, then we're going to meet Anthony and so and so in Greece or somewhere, and I was like, I go, I'm driving to Temecula right now.
He said. He goes, where are you going? I said, well, I'm going to go to Monaco after that. And he goes, I'm driving to Temecula to do a group. And probably for $50.
So that's one thing. So it's the family of origin stuff. It's the comparison issue. And
religion. Throw some religion in
there.
Maybe
some of that in there. Wait, there's a third thing I was thinking about. Yeah, can't think of it.
The fear. So...
But we do need to figure out a way to get all together, Bob. So you asked that earlier, and I am obsessed about that.
We've got to get it together.
And I keep thinking some sort of common ground, some sort of, you know, some sort of...
Are there any... Here's one thing where I find common ground. Are there anybody happy about what Washington provides us for our taxes? Is there anybody that goes,
let me even ask
gosh, you, I think they're doing an excellent job Washington.
Let me even ask them something. You ask you something different I've been asking lately. It's like, do they do anything for you? Look around your home or apartment, whatever. You have trash, it's your city. You have police, your city. You have firemen, it's your city. You have water and power, it's your city. My city does so much for me. I want to give them.
I love Los Angeles Claremont.
But
I'm going to
give them. They need my taxes. But the federal government takes 60% of everything I earn, and they give me nothing. Zero. And they never.
They defend you.
That's all they've ever given me. I don't know how much of that I need.
I keep wondering. They're not doing that good of a job.
I will say this. I want to give the federal government a little bit of a shout out, because when I was homeless and I was destitute, the federal government provided me with drug money. Yeah. They gave me
$280.
Yes.
Yeah, and food stamps that he sold for drugs.
Yeah. Well, you didn't sell the. You would get the food stamp voucher. They give you the bus tokens, and then you go down, and then you can trade your actual food stamps for 60 cents on the dollar, and then. There was the
rather, Bob, than your antisocial flair laughing at me for being outraged at this. Why don't you direct your outrage towards the federal government that does this BS?
But I've done that too. I just
no, but
like
I mean,
that hustle's been going on for four generations.
I
know.
Bob, I pay hundreds of thousands of dollars in taxes a year, and I know that a large portion of it is going towards people that are going to abuse drugs and alcohol and have kids upon kids.
Aren't we going to do something about that, everybody?
So there you go. That's mm-hmm. common ground. If Khalil's saying, and the most liberal person I know, then it's...
What's
then,
the answer?
Well, I don't know what the answer is, but I'm telling you right now, unlike everybody else out there that has an opinion about it, I was on welfare and I abused the system, and I can tell you with 100% accuracy that I'm not even going to say some other people were doing the same as me. From what I could see,
every single person,
most
was doing
people
it.
Were down there. They all had cell phones. They all had apartments. They all had flat screen TVs. They all had video game consoles. Many of them were buying people's social security numbers and milking the system for 4 or 5 checks a month. I mean, there was hustle upon hustle.
MacArthur Park.
This is what Carolla always says: is that you know it ruins people.
So and not only does it ruin people, if you teach a man, you know about learned helplessness.
Yes.
Yeah. If you teach a man not to work,
it's easy.
It's the greatest sin you can commit. Yep. Because look what happened when I finally, on my own volition, became incapable of even getting on a bus and going there and getting the food stamps.
You ended
when
up I, with me and PRC.
Yeah, when I finally bottomed out at 109 pounds with scabs all over my face. And called Penny, and Penny connected me. Do you remember Penny?
Yeah.
Penny connected me with Bob Forrest, and they sent me to
PRC.
PRC. No, well, they sent me to Buddy Arnold's place.
Map.
Yeah, they sent me to Failed Musicians Assistance Program, and Bob lobbied for me. Buddy hated me, and somehow Bob convinced Buddy, even though I was an unpublished musician, to put me into PRC. And when I the third or fourth day, Bob came up to me and he said, "You can never get high again." And I said, "What do you mean? Why me?" And he said, "Because you're different." And I said, "Well, how am I different?" And he goes, "Look at your arms." You're going to die. Look at your face. You can never get high again. And he left. And I went in my room and I cried. And he was off for the whole weekend. And I cried all weekend. And I wrestled with it. I was detoxing. I couldn't sleep. And he shows up Monday morning, and I had made peace with it. I had finally made peace with...
He forgot he said it.
No, he didn't forget he said it. He walked in, and I said, "Hey, Bob." And he goes, "Hey." And I said, "What's wrong?" He goes, "I'm not so sure about all this recovery shit." See? I said, "What do you mean?" He said, "I got in a fight with my girlfriend and she left me sitting on a rock on the side of Highway 15 or something like that."
Well, I was thinking about getting high.
Yeah, I was thinking about it. Yeah, I don't know about all this. But then...
Anyway, thank God I sobered up and thank God I learned
but
to
what
chop
I
wood
recognize,
and carry
water. But what I recognize is, because Khalil and I were very much alike, and someone that we all know who's passed away now was in treatment with him, and I knew you could latch on to him. You guys can go on a run and you're going to think you're equal buddies. No, you're fucking not.
Yeah.
And that's all I was trying to do in a therapeutic intervention.
And he's gone.
Yeah, but he had dough and a car and a studio and a place to hang out and all that. Right.
Jennifer. And Jennifer.
All right, we got to take a break. We'll be right back after this. All right, everybody. A reminder that This Life is brought to you by Bergamet Pro Plus. If you have metabolic syndrome, that's, of course, high cholesterol, high blood pressure, maybe some insulin resistance, higher blood sugar, you put your fat around the midsection, that is significantly increases your chance of heart disease. And you can reduce that by considering Bergamet Pro Plus, 100% natural. It's bergamot polyphenol. It's with the bergamot fruit, strongest, most effective citrus bergamot product on the market. Bergamet Pro Plus, previously only available through your physician. Pro Plus now has all the cardiovascular metabolic benefits of the Bergamet Mega O, but in a stronger dose. So if you are statin intolerant, even if you're on a statin and want to further lower your cholesterol, improve your health, Pro Plus may be just right for you. Please do discuss with your doctor. Only Bergamet products are approved by the prestigious Accademia del Bergamotto in Italy, which has pushed it through numerous clinical trials, and multiple cardiologists I've seen interviewed on this topic. Really, it looks impressive, the data they're collecting there. And they've spent millions of dollars on research, and they are improving the Bergamet products and amongst the best in the world there. With heart disease being the number one killer, both men and women in the U.S., what are you waiting for? Invest wisely in your lifelong health with Bergamet Pro Plus. Go to Bergamet, BERGAMET.com to order Bergamet Pro Plus. Bergamet Pro Plus today, and remember, Bergamet for life.
And we're here with my friend Khalil, and I know the book pretty well because I lived it, but he has a new book called I Forgot to Die. You can buy it on Amazon, right? Go to Dr. Drew, and you can get it somehow, right?
You have a link? You'll have
a
link?
Yeah, okay, we'll have great. It through there.
So how long are you sober? 15?
No, 13 and a half.
13 and a half. So he was one of the people that I was all in 100% with. You know what I mean? I did it with Anthony. I did it with John. I did it with
him. You pushed him 100%. Through. Why?
I don't know. I did something about him I liked.
I was so broken and desperate, I reminded him of himself.
And myself. He really did. He was the first one. So
he looks like, reminds me of Chuck Negron at that point. Remember Chuck?
Do you see Chuck? Yeah, that kind of photo. Yeah. But so I just went above and beyond. I thought outside the box. And I remember I told him I was taking him to sober living. And I took him to Hillel Slovak's grave.
You took him where?
Took me to a graveyard. Because I refused to go to sober living.
I said,
living.
This is where you're going to end up. And it worked.
It worked. It scared the shit out of me. Because he said, this guy has everything you ever wanted. He had the girls. He had the fame. He had the career. He had the money. And he's dead.
Who is
can
it?
Can you
Hillel
swear?
From the Chili Peppers.
Oh.
You can swear.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He said he's dead. He's fucking dead. And if you don't go to sober living, you're going to fucking die. And I said, okay, well, I'm going to go to that Genesis house. And he said, no, you're not. And
he
I said,
no. He wanted to go to the fancy one. He's going to living and recovery.
I said, no. I said, that's where all the cool people are. He goes, yeah. He goes, well, you're not going where the cool people are. You're going to Thelma's place.
Thelma's, right in the valley, way out, Northridge, way out.
It was 117 degrees. And it was, and again.
You got sober one treatment?
Yeah.
That's remarkable.
Well, he had 100% in.
Huh?
He was in. That day when I came back, he was in, and I was in because...
No, but wait a second. Where was I going to go? Back to Skid Row?
I'm just saying...
You were going to go to Scott's studio and get high for 2 days until he got rid of you.
On average, it takes four treatments.
That's where you were going.
To get a year of sobriety. Four treatments, get a year of sobriety.
About 15 years ago, my girlfriend's father tried to put the two of us into treatment together down in Laguna. And I jumped out of the second story window.
Okay, there's one treatment.
And then
we're living by the sea?
Spencer Recovery Center.
Spencer. Oh, yeah.
And I met a guy that was in there, this sickly, greenish looking guy who had a bunch of money in a car and credit cards.
Off you went.
And went and shot hundreds, if not thousands of dollars worth of speedballs all night, came back the next day. He goes to the fancy Bellagio house across the street. I go back into the doghouse, which is across the street from the fancy place. And I walk in, and after they chastise me, the nurse grabs me and she shakes me and she says, "You didn't share needles with him, did you?" Obviously, I shared needles with him. We were shooting speedballs. I mean, we ran out of needles. The needles broke, whatever. And she said, did you share needles with him? And I said, no. Why? I was lying through my teeth.
Yeah, of course.
I was nervous.
And she couldn't tell you.
And she actually did tell me. And she said, because he has HIV and Hep C. And I said, how do you know? And she said, because I'm the nurse. And luckily, by the grace of God, I tested clean for everything and still test clean for everything. Sheesh. But I mean,
how's that possible?
I don't know.
Oof.
I don't know.
Crazy. Was he under treatment for HIV?
He was taking the cocktail.
Okay, because sometimes their viral loads are so low from the cocktail, they're not contagious anymore.
Oh.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Maybe that's the same with my thing up in Minneapolis. Yeah.
Well, the people at Tarzana Treatment Center, which is where I got tested when I finally realized I didn't have anything, they said some people will have sex one time and get HIV AIDS, and some people will share needles for 10 years and not get it.
That's not true. But there are differing resistances to the virus. And these days when people take the medicines are so effective that they become non-contagious.
Wow.
That's how Charlie Sheen's doctor could inject himself with Charlie Sheen's blood and not worry about it, because he knew Charlie was on therapy.
Why did he do that?
Because he was trying to show he's nuts. That's why. He was trying to show
I'm not privy to the Charlie Sheen stuff. I haven't been paying close enough attention. I'm so focused on Trump, I can't think about anybody else.
He went to Mexico to get the cure, and some doctors, was so assured him that he had this vaccine cure. I'm going to take your blood, push it in my... Of course, he couldn't do that because,
filled with antivirals.
Yeah.
So Khalil gets sober and starts a treatment center, and he's the reason why I went out to Malibu. He said, "Bob, come out here." He's been trying. So many people have tried to help me get a financial footing, Drew. I need to make amends to all of them.
I
have a money aversion, is what he calls it.
You do. You inherently believe that money is evil. And first and foremost,
Drew has it too. You should listen.
No,
to it.
I feel as though being paid for service is somehow adulterating.
Feels weird. Yeah. But I wanted Bob in Malibu because I knew that he was the real deal and he helped save my life. Yeah. I mean, and I also wanted Bob to make some money. I saw a bunch of charlatans out there making all kinds of money, and I figured, well, if these guys are getting paid to not help people, why don't we get the guy that saved my life, literally saved my life through empathy and compassion and love, and give some of those
people creativity.
Out there.
You gotta be a little creative.
Yes, I agree.
And that's what I was.
That
we
never
you.
Brought that up, but you're absolutely right on that.
Creativity. Take him because I was in a bad mood, and I'd been fighting with him forever about sober living. And finally, we're in the car and we're going, and he's like whining and complaining. I'm just like, and we just happened to be near Hillel's grave.
Bob has. I'll tell you, in addition to aversion to money, he has an aversion to codependency. So if you trigger a codependent feeling, he becomes resentful and outraged and goes the other way.
Well, he also was very creative in taking the worst of the worst and putting us all together in a house, thinking that maybe sometimes a lot of those guys got sober and stayed sober. Frank Violence and I are still phenomenal friends.
I know. Who knew that guy? So there was another guy too in his group that got sober in that sober living group.
Yeah.
The guy is an archaeologist now.
Successful.
He's a fucking
archaeologist. Owns a home.
He was a homeless drug addict in MAP.
But yeah, you guys know, the three of us, I mean, that's why we do work with people in recovery, because you see these miraculous recoveries for people you would not give a rat's ass chance in hell of getting well.
If you would have known.
Now you're helpful for everybody.
If you would have known.
That's true.
And you want to you want to see it again? You want to have more
if
people
if we would have gone around the room and said, you know what? You're going to be an entrepreneur, health food guru. You're going to be an archaeologist. What would you guys have thought?
I wouldn't have believed it for a second. I wouldn't. And my own story, which is it's actually in the book that I wrote. I hope I changed her name, and I actually don't think I did. But there's a girl that I helped named Sarah who was like this but worse because she had fight in her. I didn't have any fight in me.
Yeah.
But she had lost her kids and she had lost everything and her, you know, parents disowned her and she was living on the streets and all kinds of legal problems. And they called me to bail her out. I grabbed her off the streets. I stuck her in promises. The first night there, she assaulted one of the techs.
Nice.
I mean, that's how she was. She was so full of piss and vinegar and was never, ever, ever going to get better. And she looked at people that were sober and considered them fucking losers.
Right.
She said, they are fucking losers. Yeah. Fuck you. Fuck Malibu and all your Bentleys and blah, blah, blah.
She got sober?
She is not only sober and an amazing mother. One of my best friends, her...
How'd they break through that? Because that's a kind of a denial I have trouble breaking through.
She lived with me for 16 months.
At Riviera.
She lived
his
with
treatment
me.
Center.
But how'd you get her willing to even show up?
She was going to get locked up if she didn't.
Oh, there you go.
So okay. She had the law. Well,
there you go.
Yeah, so she had the law. And she also would be, you know, would never have access to what little, yeah, her kids. Yeah. And there was also maybe some money involved. I don't know. But she followed me. She shadowed me. She began to eat like I ate. I began to watch her come to life. And just, I didn't want to tell the whole story, but she now, in her hometown, started the first organic market.
Oh, wow, cool.
This is a girl that wouldn't have eaten an apple 15 years ago. She thought you were stupid if you ate vegetables or fruits. And
what did she think was smart? Heroin, cocaine?
Speed. She loved speed. She loved cigarettes, and she loved boys.
Oh, okay.
And now she doesn't smoke, and she doesn't do speed. But she no, she's not actually. She's
Let me read some emails. I got a sex addict question. I'm addicted to this. Is from I don't want to read his name. Addicted to cybersex for many years. I've exchanged photos and videos with women masturbating. This has caused my almost marital breakdown. Will a specialist help me? A psychiatrist? Actually, psychiatrists may not be equipped to deal with this. You guys see much sex addiction out there?
Oh yeah,
yeah. Particularly the internet, porn addiction, right?
Well, with younger people, it's, you know, I haven't seen it with it sounds like a mature person, right?
Yeah, maturer.
Needs to go.
That's a great website I know called Center for Healthy Sex, centerforhealthysex.com, run by a woman named Alexandra Katahak, who's an excellent therapist. Candy knew her. Candy signed off on her, too. And there are people that really specialize in this.
About Carnes and real treatment for it?
Absolutely. The Carnes is represented on that website, also at Society for the Advancement of Sexual Health, the SASH.net website. You can go there. And again, they have referrals. There's a referral-based system there. And these people really know how to deal with this stuff. The treatment is not easy. It ain't easy.
But doesn't Simone deal with that?
Simone deals a little bit.
Neil Strauss, that wrote that book, The Truth, actually went to treatment for sex addiction.
At Carnes in Mississippi, did he go?
I don't know, but I know that he was very resistant and really didn't like it at the time and now looks back on it and thinks that it was amazing. And I have not read his book, which I really should because...
It's supposed to be a good book.
Yeah.
And I listen to his podcast, too. I bet he...
I've been on his podcast.
It's called The Truth.
Is it at like a dinner? Yeah, I was at his podcast.
Called The Truth?
I did it.
All right. But here's the deal. You got to go to 12-step like any other addiction. And people really resist going to SLA meetings. And now I've noticed that pretty much anywhere I've seen an NA meeting, they also have SLA meetings right in the same
place. You want to know an even grayer, weirder evolution of it? When my friend went to sex treatment with Carnes and then to long-term in Philadelphia and
by the way,
back,
we'll put Patrick Carnes' book up on our website.
Yeah, he's the guy.
He's got the greatest books.
So
Out of the Shadows
when
is
my friend,
original.
Yeah, when my
awesome
friend,
title.
Yeah. When my friend did it, he came back, was going to SLA. That's where I always reported to you. It's like a dating sex thing. A lot of it was.
But not supposed
but
to be.
But what started that... That's what was going on.
Look, dude, any more than NA is a heroin pen.
No, day. Way more sex in SLA than there was heroin
maybe
and Alcoholics
Anonymous.
Maybe
back in the day. I don't know.
But here's what I'm saying.
Are they cute girls?
Most of those men that I dealt with are sober members of AA.
Yeah.
And they started talking more openly about sex as a part of the alcoholic condition.
Yeah, it's in the first step.
AA.
It's in the first step.
Well, it's in the fourth step.
In the workbooks, yeah.
Yeah.
It's so, in the first step too. It's in certain workbooks anyway.
I've no, but it. The point is, you look at your
you do sexual inventory.
Your sexual inventory in 4.7 AA. So it's become more of a topic of discussion in AA be held accountable. Bob, in that
done well, yes, a perfectly pristine 12-step process should include that. How many guys are?
I hear it talked about a lot in men's meetings.
Hang on. Plus, there are slippery behaviors too that you have to sort of learn how to deal with. You have to be in a culture that teaches you how to deal with this stuff. It has specialized needs. It really does.
I mean, for me, and I'm definitely not an expert in this area, but like, I just don't look at porn. I find myself if I look at porn, I find myself drawn in, and then I find it becomes habitual, and I start spending more and more time. So I have a rule that I just don't look at porn, and I think that with a lot of these situations, if you give it any type of energy whatsoever, then it takes on a life of its own.
I've done that with porn, I've done that with gambling, and I just don't. I'm going to Vegas tomorrow. I just don't gamble.
Yeah,
I just
smart.
Don't. I know that you do.
I gamble a lot, and I love it. I gamble.
I love it. Is that a normal relationship with gambling?
I work 7 days a week and
The rationalization.
I deserve a little pot at night. I deserve a pot here.
No.
I deserve it. I work hard for money.
But there is a habituation of gambling. Like, he's in a gambling world. One of his best friends is one of the most successful poker players in the world.
It doesn't matter.
But I know a lot of those guys.
My friend flies a private jet a couple times a month to Vegas, gets put up in the Nobu penthouse.
That's great.
Takes me with him.
Yeah.
I will throw around $5,000, $10,000, or seven times a year.
Okay.
I get my yayas out. And
but you can't play in his room, though. You got to play in the dumb people's room.
I stand next to him as a good luck charm.
Does he have a nickname? Does he wear sunglasses?
No.
A hoodie?
No, he wears a sideways ball cap, and he's an awesome guy, and I want to keep getting invited on the private jet, so I'm going to leave his name out.
I get it. But that doesn't sound like you love it, because something you love, you're not going to be able to self-limit so much. You like it
I think it's cool.
Much,
I think it's much like living vicariously. It's neat to go watch Anthony play shows because he's your friend and whatever. It's like that with the gambling.
Just be careful,
for you.
That's all.
Yeah.
No, because we were in Vegas outside House of Blues. Remember playing slots.
Blackjack.
Blackjack.
Yeah, blackjack.
Right?
Yeah.
You gamble now? Could,
no, I, well, I pl- this is like seven.
I won a bunch
ago.
Of money in front of him, and I got up and I walked away, and he's like, "What are you doing?" I'm like, "Bob, I won, so I'm leaving." And he's like, "No, you should keep going." I'm like, "You lost all your money, and you're advising me to keep playing."
That's the story
Bob,
I wanted to
Bob
tell.
Bob did have a gambling problem.
Yeah, I did.
Yeah.
And I just stopped. I just don't do it, and I don't have any compulsion or desire to do it.
I'll tell you what, though. I if I were objectively looking at my own where I focus my energy, I don't put enough focus on gambling for people. We're all kind of dismissing it a little bit, but for some people it is really a problem. And so I just want to state it. Even though we're blushing past it a little bit, I'm letting everyone off the hook, whatever.
Ruined my friend's life.
Yeah, it can be really bad. And I don't give enough attention.
But I just think what I was trying to say is by dealing with it in the community where you feel safest, which is the AA, the 12-step AA, right? I can talk about sex there. I can talk about porn there. I can talk about gambling there. I can talk about nicotine there. Mm-hmm. That when you go to these separate programs, of which I've been to Nicotine Anonymous and Gamblers Anonymous, I just don't feel like I can talk about it there. It's all Do you understand what I'm saying?
I do, but there's a meeting, and I'm hesitant to talk about it. I don't want to name any names. There's a meeting in Venice that is sort of famous for people that go there and discuss their sex addictions, and I was invited along there.
An AA meeting.
It's kind of an AA meeting, but I think it's an SLA meeting. But anyway,
but they're all sober guys.
Most of them are sober, and I saw incredible value in what they were doing there.
Yeah.
And also, this is early on in my recovery. There were some behaviors of my own, chasing around newcomers and all that stuff that I felt comfortable sharing in there.
That's what I'm talking about.
Because
wherever it is, you need to feel safe enough to be honest.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. Sure. You if you take your darkness and you bring it to the light, it's no longer darkness.
Yeah.
So when I said, I've been having sex with, newcomers and chasing them around, and everyone started laughing, much in the same way that when I first went into AA and I was like, I took crack and lemon juice and I shot it in my neck, and then everyone started laughing, and I'm like, what's wrong with these people? but also I felt a great relief because then I didn't feel ashamed anymore.
No, I love and use humor.
And the more I shared, the more I brought it out into the light, the more I talked about it. You know, a friend of mine who lives in Malibu, we were talking about porn 3-4 years ago, and he was spending 3-5 hours a day on porn, and I just said, done, no more. Do not look at it at all. And it wasn't the, you know, panacea. It didn't work overnight, but over the course of a year there were relapses into it, and then more discussion about it and relapse, and now it's not an issue.
That was him or you?
No, him.
Him, yeah. Yeah. Well, again, there are ways to help people get there. And some people need very specialized, they need circle plans, they need, you know, ways to clean up their equipment, you know, their electronic equipment.
Yeah.
They need support in certain areas. They need to be able to talk about stuff that maybe they wouldn't be comfortable talking about with other people, because
right.
It can go very weird. It can go very dark.
Sure.
And outside of those rooms, in a regular AA meeting, they may not feel comfortable talking about that, just as the way you're saying. And there is a lot of room for
sex and drugs are tied together.
I understand.
That's
that.
Why they say, well, sex and drugs for rock and roll.
For my opinion is this, whether it's debt, whether it's gambling,
yeah.
whether it's sex addiction,
yeah.
there are a ton of people out there that are suffering.
Oh, yeah.
And what they need to know is that they can change. They need to know that they can change. And if there's anything I'm going to do on this planet before I die, other than try to get a bunch of likes on Instagram or Facebook or fly around on my friend's jets or whatever, if there's one thing I want to do for people out there that are suffering, is let them know 1,000% that they can change. Yeah. That's why I wrote the book. That's why I put a picture of myself, the anti-selfie, at 109 pounds with scabs all over my face. I have these in each of my stores,
yeah.
which people were horrified. They were like, don't put that at the front counter.
And I said, no, right by the cash register.
I'm going to put it at the front counter because I want anyone that comes in here that is suffering, whether it's weight, you know, eating, gambling, whatever it is, I want them to pick this up and know that you go from that to that.
Yeah.
There you go.
No, that's why we do the work, right?
That's why
we like this.
Here we go.
Are we wrapping things up here?
I think so.
Okay, excellent. Appreciate coming out for this.
Thank you.
Really do. And enjoy Italy.
Thank you. I will.
Reads.
And Monaco.
And think about the Temecula while you're out there.
He's going to be sweating, windows down, 100 degrees, and I'm going to be, you know, laying out with topless French women in the south of France.
You deserve it.
Thank you.
I love you, Khalil.
I love you, buddy. Bye-bye. I love right, you,
guys.
Drew. Thank you.
Thank you, guys. A reminder to Playroom Pods, courtesy of Dr.com. We'd like to hear from you. All the podcasts are listed as soon as they go up on the website. Plus, we now have a new newsletter up to give you insights into the topics of the new shows. We always try to read your email, so sign up at contact.com. Tell us what is on your mind. Good or bad, we get the emails. We certainly try to bring what we can onto the show. And we also have the new podcast with Dr. Bruce Heischober, which is more medically focused. It's called Weekly Infusion. Please subscribe on iTunes and tweet us your thoughts and suggestions at This Life Podcast and at Weekly Infusion. And tell a friend. Give us 5 stars on iTunes or Podbean or Podbay. And also, please do subscribe.
Help, help, help.
That's promote. Right. And we'll see you next time.
Bye-bye. Living on a fast train, don't feel like I'm moving. And though I try, in truth, it all just fails. I'm pushing through the ocean, but I can't swim. I'm drowning.
stars. I can't contain it, no, I can't explain. It's the way I feel when you are near. Pushing through my atmosphere, shining like a billion stars. They're perfectly aligned. I love you. Yes, I love. You know I love you, babe. You know I love you, babe. Ooh. I love everything about you. I love you. You know I love you, babe. Ooh. Yes, I love everything about you. Still I try.